I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Transition Mode. President-elect Donald Trump names his picks to work on the U.S. border and with the United Nations. Bicoastal concern. Wildfires are burning in California and New Jersey. How a Catholic group is trying to help. Sister, soldier, surgeon. On Veterans Day, learn more about a new book on a remarkable religious sister in the nation's capital. Plus, a developing story. Why the Vatican recently teamed up with Microsoft to take 400,000 pictures inside of St. Peter's Basilica. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Martin of Tours. Our top story tonight, the 2024 election is in the rearview mirror while Democrats are still searching for the black box buried under the election crash site. President-elect Donald Trump is quickly moving into transition mode. In just the last few days, he announced several high-level appointments and a cabinet nomination. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with the latest. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. We know that one campaign issue that former President Donald Trump, now President-elect Donald Trump, ran on was fixing the southern border crisis. Well, he took a major step in appointing his former ICE immigration director, Tom Homan. Now, Homan is no stranger to the Trump administration. He served as a Trump enforcement, immigration enforcement before. Now, Homan says that he's not afraid to deport illegal aliens, and he says that even if that means separating families.
Public safety threats and national security threats will be the priority because they have to be. They pose the most danger to this country. So we're going to prioritize those groups, those who always have final orders, those that had due process, a great taxpayer expense, and a federal judge says you must go home, and they didn't. They became a fugitive.
Besides heading up ICE, Homan joined the Heritage Foundation in 2022 and contributed to its Project 2025. It calls for mass arrests, detentions, and deportations of undocumented immigrants. Homan says any deportation will be done in a humane manner, but adds the Biden-Harris administration has lost over 300,000 children smuggled into the U.S.
We need to save these children because some of these children are in forced labor. Some of these children are in sex trafficking. Some of these children are living a life of hell every day. And we need to save these children and get them back to their families.
The president-elect has also picked New York Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik for U.N. ambassador. He said in a statement, quote, Elise is an incredibly strong, tough, and smart America First fighter. The Republican conference chair is currently the fourth-ranked House Republican. As for other cabinet positions, many in the GOP are visiting Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida right now, trying to secure a place on the team. Reports say North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum is being considered for Secretary of Energy, and Trump's former trade advisor Pete Navarro is also vying for a cabinet position as well. And Stephen Miller will return to the White House as Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy. As we reported, Trump already made history announcing the country's first ever female Chief of Staff, Susie Wiles, a tough strategist known more for quiet calculations.
Of course, the president's going to look at people that he's surrounded with before and is comfortable with. As you know, President Trump does demand a lot of loyalty. And as a boss, I can tell you, he was pretty attentive.
It's also been announced that former New York Congressman Lee Zeldin will lead the EPA. Now, the former president says that he will restore American energy dominance and cut all the red tape that's hurting businesses. It's important to note that something else to consider, that Senate rules actually require just a simple majority of those voting to confirm a nominee. Next Congress, Republicans will have a three-seat majority at 53, so that means that Trump's cabinet members will likely be confirmed very quickly without delay. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, as Donald Trump's new administration begins to take shape, the president-elect plans to meet President Joe Biden this week at the White House. And today, President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris appeared together for the first time since she lost the presidential election. They participated in the annual Veterans Day observance at Arlington National Cemetery. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. More on that upcoming meeting between Biden and Trump in a moment. But first, in his remarks today at Arlington National Cemetery, President Biden called leading, serving, and caring for veterans the greatest honor of his life.
On this Veterans Day, President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris lay a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier. The president also delivering remarks.
We have many obligations, but only one truly sacred obligation. Sacred. Prepare those we send into harm's way and to care for them and their families when they return home and when they don't.
Meanwhile, in just 2 days, President-elect Donald Trump will visit the White House to meet with Biden. The visit comes as the Kremlin rejects reports that Russian President Vladimir Putin spoke last week with President-elect Trump about the war in Ukraine. A spokesman for Trump refused to comment on what he called his private calls with world leaders. On Sunday, White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said as Biden's term winds down, he will have the opportunity
to make the case to the Congress and to the incoming administration that the United States should not walk away from Ukraine, that walking away from Ukraine means more instability in Europe.
Sullivan says the U.S. approach remains the same since the war started nearly 3 years ago,
which is to put Ukraine in the strongest possible position on the battlefield so that it is ultimately in the strongest possible position at the negotiating table.
During his campaign, Trump repeatedly said he could quickly end the fighting in Ukraine, but did not offer details of how he would accomplish that. As the war approaches its 1,000-day mark, Russia has intensified strikes on civilian areas in Ukraine, including this apartment building hit by a Russian ballistic missile. For its part, Ukraine over the weekend sent a massive wave of drones that rattled Moscow and its suburbs. Video shows a Ukrainian drone shot down.
Now, the U.S. is the biggest provider of military aid to Ukraine. And tonight, both Russia and Ukraine are waiting to see how Donald Trump will handle the war once he moves in here. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
While both the Pacific and Atlantic Coast crews are battling major wildfires in California, more than 100 homes have been destroyed by a fire in Ventura County.
We looked out the windows and saw a lot of smoke in the canyon and cars going down the road with horns of blaring and get out of here, get out of here.
Meanwhile, on the East Coast, crews are fighting another fire burning on the New York-New Jersey border that left one person dead. An 18-year-old volunteer New York State Forest Ranger died while responding to the wildfire, which has grown to nearly 5 square miles and is currently only 10% contained. And joining us now from California is Sean McCarty with Catholic Charities of Los Angeles. Sean, great to be with you today. Talk to us about the situation where you are right now in California. What are you seeing and how bad is it?
It's difficult to tell right now how bad it is because we can't really go into the area for safety reasons. I was out there on Friday and just about a couple miles from where the fire started, and we couldn't really see smoke, although I think it's about 30% contained right now. I haven't gotten an update yet today, but later on this afternoon I will.
Yeah, and just looking at the images, it just looks really terrible out there. How is Catholic Charities assisting folks?
Mostly what we're doing right now is we are part of an organization called VOAD, Ventura County Organization for Disaster Relief. And what we do is we join up with them in order to better serve the community. We really don't like to move in until the first responders have said it's safe. And so basically, we're in an organization mode right now, collecting whatever donations we can, mostly financial donations.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you this, Sean. What are the biggest needs right now? What are you seeing?
Well, we've had over 500 calls for help. People call into 211 to find out what resources are out there. Mostly what people need right now is housing and food gift cards. So there are organizations that can help with that. And so if anybody contacts the VOAD in Ventura, they can find out how to best donate.
I know the Catholic Charities, I mean, not only do you help on the short term, but also with long-term assistance. Can you tell us about that and how you help folks kind of rebuild after this happens?
So this is about the third. Well, I've worked on three disasters, and this may be the fourth one I work. And mostly what we do at Catholic Charities is long-term recovery. And so that takes about 2 years of a program, and we find organizations that do have, let's say, financial help or volunteer help, and we put them in contact with the survivors of the disasters. And as I said, yeah, it can take even longer than 2 years. Mostly we try to find places where people can be safe. And if they need anything else, they let us know. We help out with construction. We help out with rental assistance sometimes. Sometimes it's just as simple as helping out with utilities or food assistance.
Yeah, real quick, Sean, before I let you go, for those that may want to help out either in California or New York, New Jersey, how can they do so?
Well, you can always contact the Catholic Charities. For a disaster like this, because it's so soon, they may not have any type of an account set up right away. We like people to specify exactly which disaster they're helping out with. And in Ventura, you can contact the VC BOAD to donate directly to.
All right.
I'm not sure in New Jersey how they can do it, but you can also contact the Catholic Charities USA or the local Catholic Charities to help out.
Okay, great. Sean, thank you so much, and thank you for all you do. God bless.
God bless. Thank you for having me.
All right, now to the Middle East, where Israel's new foreign minister claims progress is being made in efforts to end the fighting with Lebanon's militant group Hezbollah. Israel wants the deal to include measures to stop Hezbollah from rebuilding its military near the border. The foreign minister also calls Iran's nuclear capability the top security concern in the Middle East and rules out a two-state solution. Hezbollah says that it has not received any official ceasefire proposal and is ready for a long war. All this comes as Hezbollah launches more than 90 rockets at Israel, leaving several homes and cars damaged. Meanwhile, Yemen's Houthi rebels claim to target an Israeli military base. The IDF says a missile was shot down on approach to Israel. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including Veterans Day inspiration. A new book examines the life and service of a religious sister in the nation's capital. We have the details. This Veterans Day, a new book highlights the incredible life, accomplishments, and courage of Sister Dee Dee Byrne. Sister, Soldier, Surgeon takes a closer look at Sister Dee Dee, a superior in her community, the Little Workers of the Sacred Heart. She is also a renowned surgeon and Army colonel and has been dubbed the Mother Teresa of D.C. for providing care to the marginalized in the basement clinic of her convent. Sister Dee Dee and the author of the book about her remarkable life, Dr. Lisa Marie Carzen, join us now in the studio. Well, welcome to you both and happy Veterans Day as well.
Thank you. Happy Vets Day to you.
Thank you so much. So much to talk about. But Sister, I'm going to start with you. What did you think when Lisa Marie said she wanted to write a book about your life?
I wanted to crawl under a table and ask, could you wait till I die, is really the truth.
But how flattering.
If it's all for Jesus, I don't want anything toward me. It's too much.
Yeah. So, but you do have an incredible, incredible life story. Yeah. Lisa Marie, tell us what inspired you to write this book and why now?
Yes, because I think our culture needs this example of Sister and how she lives her faith in the public square. I first got to know Sister in 2020, like everybody else, after her appearance at the RNC, and called her cold. And I said, Sister, please, can I come and shadow you for the purposes of writing the book? She said, you must be writing a comic book. And then she asked, please, can you wait till I'm dead? I said, Sister, our culture, our nation, our children, our grandchildren need this example of the permeation of faith in the public square now more than ever.
Absolutely. And Sister Dee Dee, you're so humble about your life. So I'm going to direct this to Lisa Marie.
You
have done so much, so much. You were a surgeon in Afghanistan for Operation Enduring Freedom, and you even helped to rescue people from the Taliban. I'm going to ask Lisa Marie this because I know you're very humble about this. Tell us more about that and what you hope people learn from her life.
Well, and it's not just, it's her entire service. So not only was she helping to rescue people that were in hiding from the Taliban, but also holding prayer services during the time she was there. Hundreds ended up coming to her the prayer services that she led. Conversions took place as a result of that. But also just this idea of the way people approach her and want to tell them her story. We were praying outside the doors of Planned Parenthood. She would follow the women and say, I'm a physician. I can help reverse your chemical abortion. And the women who then showed up at her doorstep the next day to reverse their chemical abortions, 3 in 1 week.
Wow.
3 in 1 week. So it was a beautiful story of witnessing the love of Christ in such a way that people are transformed, this transformative love that witnesses to the love of Christ.
Yeah, and we feel it just sitting here with you. I mean, from outside the abortion clinics mm-hmm. to the battlefield, talk to us, sister, about how your Catholic faith carries you through.
It's everything. My parents were wonderful role models, both daily mass goers. I'm one of eight. I have a brother who's a bishop, Bishop Bill Byrne, great influence on all our lives. It's the Eucharist. Our founder, the founder of the Little Workers of the Sacred Heart, said it was before the Most Blessed Sacrament that I found the love of Jesus and the power of that love. So it's really all that.
You have a special project.
We have a special project. If you go to Credo, C-R-E-D-O, St. Louis, spelled S-T-L-O-U-I-S.org, I lost a very dear friend in April 4th, 2022. She was euthanized. Euthanasia is taking the life without your wanting to be taken. She wanted to live. She was not terminally ill. She was chronically ill. And we were getting her to come to Washington, but she was killed. Mm. The story, the documentary is going to be shown this week in St. Louis. So CredoSt.Louis.org for any of your viewers who are in St. Louis now. We please beg you to come. But I will be showing the documentary. We'll hopefully offer it for free on the same website or on another website to be able to get the word out about the evils of euthanasia.
Thank you both
Thank you so much.
God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you.
And for more information on the book, visit SisterSoldierSurgeon.com. Proceeds from the book benefit Sister Dee Dee's religious order right here in Washington, D.C. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, seeing St. Peter's Basilica in a new light. Learn about a new initiative between the Vatican and Microsoft. Plus, church leaders in the U.S. are getting ready for their fall meetings in Baltimore. We have a preview. Recovering after he was stabbed during Mass in Singapore. Father Christopher Lee was attacked during communion on Saturday evening. He is currently in stable condition. A suspect has been arrested in connection to the stabbing. Well, the head of the Anglican Church of England is under pressure to resign. This comes after a probe showed Archbishop Justin Welby failed to inform police about repeated physical and sexual abuse by a volunteer at Christian summer camp. Some members of the General Synod have started a petition calling on the Anglican leader to step down. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is gathering this week for its fall assembly in Baltimore. The church leaders have several items on their agenda. They include discussions on how to implement suggestions from the recently concluded Synod on Synodality, plus a follow-up to a 2005 document on lay ministry, and even discussions on some canonization causes. All right, for more, we turn now to Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director for EWTN News. Matthew, great to have you in the studio.
Good to be with you, as always.
So, of course, you're going to Baltimore.
Yes.
Curious about this. Do you think the bishops are going to talk about the recent presidential election and President-elect Donald Trump?
Well, a week ago, when we didn't know who was going to be the next president, I think the bishops are looking at two very different universes of how they're going to approach two different governments, the prospect of Kamala Harris being elected versus Donald Trump. We have decisive clarity. So the bishops, I think, are going to be looking at the next 4 years. We saw in 2016 that the bishops moved pretty quickly to welcome the president, but at the same time, were very clear on issues like immigration, that there was a line that they wanted to draw. In 2020, we had a similar thing, a similar statement regarding Joe Biden, who, as a second Catholic president, also held positions that were diametrically opposed to church teaching. So I suspect that the bishops are going to be moving cautiously to promote unity with this new government, but there are going to be areas of agreement But there are going to be some pretty strong areas of disagreement. The one, of course, that comes most to mind is immigration.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that. A lot of things on the agenda. But what do you think will take precedence?
Yeah, well, first, one of the other big topics that the bishops are going to be approaching is the Synod on Synodality that just concluded. We had a very large delegation of American bishops that were there, everyone from Cardinal Blaise Subich of Chicago to the president of the conference, Archbishop Broglio. So that, I think, is going to be overhanging some of at least the closed-door discussions. They're going to be getting a report on the Synod. How they go about implementing Pope Francis's vision for the Synod, I think, is a major topic for them, not just this year, but going forward. Then we have a number of elections of committee chairs, including one on immigration. Again, that'll be setting the tone for the conference, especially in how it deals with the President-elect Trump. We have as well some discussion about human dignity, the document Dignitas Infinita, again reflecting on human dignity, which raises the specter of transgender issues, an area I think where we will have much common ground between the USCCB and this administration.
Yeah, and to jump off of that, we had Bishop Thomas Daley from out in Washington on recently on the show, and he was calling on his brother bishops to address the 150 or so Catholic hospitals that are actually participating in so-called gender-affirming care.
That's right.
How is that going to come up, do you think?
Well, I know Bishop Daley would like the bishops to speak on it. As far as I'm aware, at this point, it's not officially on the agenda, but I can guarantee that this is going to be in the mix of the discussions of the bishops and looking forward to this new administration. We know that the Trump administration is probably going to be doing what it can on the federal side to limit, restrict, even prohibit transgender surgeries, especially for minors. So there'll be that common ground. I think Bishop Daley may not necessarily have it attached to the agenda, but I would be very surprised if at some point the bishops don't weigh in on this. This is a very contentious issue, especially for Catholic identity. But again, we'll have to see how this plays out on the broader political side as this new administration settles in.
Matthew, thank you so much. Looking forward to your reporting.
Great to be here.
Pope Francis reminds the faithful that good leaders make sacrifices for others and always remain humble.
Guardavano gli altri dall'alto in basso.
At a Sunday address at the Vatican, the Holy Father encouraged Christians to overcome the temptation to impose their will and authority on others, adding that our Lord tells us to steer clear of people who have those traits. Well, finally tonight, even for those who are thousands of miles from Rome, there is a chance for an up-close look at St. Peter's Basilica, thanks to an initiative from the Holy See and Microsoft that features 400,000 photos. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittergren has more.
We are here today because St. Peter was here 2,000 years ago. So the first chapter of the story brings to life in new ways, audio, digitally, the story of his life, the story that is told in the Gospels. And from there, one then sees the second chapter in this story. It's the story of this place. What has happened here over the course of 2,000 years?
And now, in 2024, the birth of Christianity is brought to life through the technology of artificial intelligence. Today, the Vatican virtually opened St. Peter's Basilica to the world after unveiling its digital twin developed by Microsoft. The initiative is a collaboration between the American tech company and the Fabric of St. Peter, the organization responsible for the conservation and maintenance of St. Peter's Basilica. Microsoft captured over 400,000 high-resolution images of the basilica using drones, cameras, and lasers. It resulted in two immersive exhibitions at the basilica itself and an interactive website. In 2019, Brad Smith launched Microsoft's AI for Cultural Heritage program to provide digitally enriched ways to explore art, architecture, and historical sites through AI, but describes this initiative as one of the largest projects of its kind.
The ability to take all of this data and see this basilica as I think no generation has ever seen it before. To go from the tombs underneath the floor all the way to the top of the dome. To see it from the outside and in, to understand what an extraordinary place it is. And we're not just creating something that will enable people to come to Rome and visit the Vatican and understand this place and what happened here in new ways. We're taking this story to the world.
Members of the Fabric of St. Peter were challenged to use the latest technologies to help in their apostolic ministry, but to always respect the Basilica's sacredness and preserve it as a living place of faith and history.
Out of this partnership, we've been able to combine what we know and learn from each other. And in that deeper meaning that we've found, I think we have created something that can connect the world and bring people together.
This isn't the only collaboration between Microsoft and the Catholic Church. Last month, Microsoft announced a collaboration with the City of Rome to develop Julia, an AI-based virtual assistant that will help the over 35 million visitors expected for the upcoming 2025 Jubilee year. In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN, News Nightly.
Oh, we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, God bless, and happy Veterans Day.